Hey everyone, it's me, Matthew. I'm just checking back in. Obviously, I haven't done anything but the podcast or with anything video related for quite some time. But I wanted to take an opportunity while I'm physically well and physically able to, just to give you all kind of an update on how I am, and just to kind of explain what the past few months have been like. For those of you who don't know, I was diagnosed with leukemia on January 16th. It's currently March 14th. And so I just wanted to, because I purposefully have not spoken about it, so I wanted to take this opportunity to speak about it and to get it on recording. Just because hearing other people's stories has helped me a lot over the past couple of months, hearing people who have been through the same stuff as I have. So just to kind of clarify, to thank, and to hopefully encourage others out there, I wanted to record my story and how it's impacted me. I'll kind of do this in a two-part deal. I recorded earlier today. I recorded about an hour's worth of audio, and I listened back to it, and it was just too jumbled up and too crazy because I was trying to combine several elements at once. And like I said, the recording was an hour long, and it was my story mixed with how it's impacted me now. And I was drawing lots of different lines, lots of different places. It was kind of just incoherent. So now that I've decided, I'm going to break this up first into kind of just the practical narrative story. Just flat out telling you what happened, not so much what I was going through or my reaction. And then I will cover my reaction and how this has affected me emotionally, spiritually. I'll address that in a second half. I'll split it up for y'all just because I think that is going to be easier to digest. A couple of disclaimers in the front. I know that especially now in this media age, and especially because I am going to be posting this, I'll post this as a podcast, but I'll also be posting clips of this on social media. I know that it's kind of the trend to, you know, post a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes worth of stuff and kind of compile things in there. And I'll do my best to make this concise, but it's just not something. This isn't a journey that I can compile for you in nice, neat 3 minute packages. It's going to be a little lengthy, but I think that's okay. You all have the ability to pause this wherever you're listening and come back to it later. But I do ask, I mean, if you feel led to listen to it, maybe it will encourage you. If not now, then later on down the road. But yeah, even if no one listens to this, you know, well, I guess, I mean, I wouldn't be recording it if I didn't expect someone to listen to it. But I mean, hopefully, at the very least, this can encourage somebody. At least one person out there can listen to this and be encouraged by it. Now, do forgive me as well. I'm dealing with a few issues today as well, just side effects of the chemo. I really probably should have gotten a blood transfusion last week. I did not. And so I'm dealing with a lot of side effects of that. Right now, my mouth is pretty torn up with ulcers. It's pretty painful, actually, to talk or eat right now. But I still felt like this was a time where this was probably my only day where I wasn't doing anything. And it was a time where I could sit down and talk, and a time where I was physically and mentally able to. And so I think now is going to be the best time right now for me to give you all an update. And I purposefully haven't talked for a while, and I haven't posted anything about it. I think I posted maybe one picture on Snapchat of me in the hospital while I was on chemo. But other than that, I've avoided saying anything on social media on purpose. I also think I posted one picture on Instagram just to thank people who had sent in cards and stuff. But I mean, I have purposefully not posted about this journey, A, because I didn't want to make, I mean, this is not about me, if that makes sense. I didn't want to draw any attention to myself. I wanted prayers, that's for sure. But I think as soon as you start posting, you know, everything on social media, you know, I'm just not a very quick person to do that. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong or would have been anything wrong with me doing that. But, I mean, that's not me. That's who I am. And I don't post things very quickly. The things that I post are slow, thought out. I don't just really jump on there and post my first thoughts. And that's kind of how I've wanted to approach this. I didn't just want to talk into a microphone on my first reactions and upload that. I wanted to take some time, kind of think through this, think of the best approach to this. But I do think the best approach is to just be blatant, just to be honest and raw with you all. And so that's kind of what I'm doing. I mean, it's what I did earlier. I kind of just got in front of a microphone and started talking, realized that I probably needed a little more structure than that. But that's essentially what I'm going to be doing. I just have a tiny bit of structure. Like I said, first half is going to be just purely experience, and second half is going to be how it's impacted me on a personal level. So let's go ahead and dive in. It was always my intention to share my experience. And especially, it was always my intention to, first of all, thank those of you who are listening to this, who have been there for me. And whether that is through praying for me, whether that is through reaching out with letters or texts, phone calls, whether that is through sending meals to myself or my family, whether that's through sending monetary donations to help us pay for these medical bills. I just want to say thank you. And thank you, of course, doesn't encompass anything of what I actually feel. It's just the most intense, most humbling gratitude that I can feel. But the only words I have are thank you. And I want to make that very first and foremost the thing that I say, because that has been the thing that has just touched me the most, has been your generosity, your help. And so, yeah, that's really made a difference. It really has. You'll never know that. You'll never know the impact that you have made. I'll try to explain it. But I do want to say thank you for those of you who have been there for me. And that's one thing I'd like to say right off the bat, too. Because I know some of you may not listen to all of it. And so one thing I want to get out there early is that if you have somebody who is going through cancer, and not just cancer, but a difficult life situation, a terminal illness of some sort, I don't know. Yeah, I would even go so far as to say depression, mental illnesses. If you have somebody in your life who you know is struggling, whether it be a physical, mental, spiritual illness, at least from my perspective and from what I've listened to other cancer patients as well over this time, don't be afraid to reach out, because it can be a very lonely time. I think a lot of times people feel afraid to reach out because they don't want to feel like a bother. And you're not. You're not a bother. It can get quite lonely because, at least for me, I have to stop so much of what I'm used to doing in life. And I've, you know, lost a lot of, you know, school and school activities and even just the simple being able to go to church and be around, you know, that group of people. I've just lost a lot of community. And so don't feel afraid to reach out. It's very helpful, very, very helpful, and very needed. All right, so we just hit the 10-minute mark. So I'm going to go ahead and after that very long prelude. And again, I'm making this long because I want you to hear my thoughts. That's why it's so long, because I'm not editing this out. I know I said earlier that I'd recorded and that this is a fresh recording, but from this fresh recording, I'm not editing things. What you're hearing is the raw thoughts as they're coming out, and that's my goal, is just for you to hear my thoughts and my story, and as it is, unedited. So let's dive in a little bit into how this all happened. So, back in probably December, and again, forgive me, I'm being a little quiet, and it is, again, a little difficult to talk just because my mouth is hurting, back in December, I had, started noticing, we were on Christmas break, and I'd started noticing these tiny little red dots that had started appearing on my skin, mainly on my legs at first, and then on my hands and arms, and then eventually all over my body, slowly as time went on, but at first on that trip, just on my legs and hands, I noticed these little tiny red dots. It's almost as if you took a red pen and started putting dots on my skin. And thought, huh, that's weird. Told them to my mom, but I didn't show them to her. And she initially was like, hey, that's probably a sign of high blood pressure. We had just done some hiking. And so we had hiked up this waterfall that I'd hiked up before. We were vacationing in the mountains out in Georgia. We were staying at a cabin there. And, you know, we'll go. My mom loves waterfalls. So we went out to a waterfall with her. Hiked up, and I had some difficulties. I was by far the last person. I was really struggling once I got up to the top, just breathing hard. It took me about a minute or two to catch my breath, and I had just been walking up. But I also hadn't exercised in a while. We were probably like, oh, you know, and it's not the easiest waterfall to get up, and so, you know, we kind of just brushed it off as being out of shape, which I think was reasonable for where we were at the time and what we were thinking. And so a couple weeks later, right at the beginning of January, my father moved out. I went and helped him move, and I just had to take a break. I mean, it would be as simple as, you know, me taking a box and carrying it down, and then I'd have to just sit down because, you know, my back was starting to cramp up. I couldn't really breathe, but I would have been alarmed, but I had done a 2-day complete fast prior to that. I'd done it Friday afternoon up until Sunday afternoon, and this was on Monday. And so I just thought I was weak from the lack of eating the two previous days and not having eaten much since then. So I didn't think anything of it, just kind of brushed it off. Well, then it got to the point where I was breathing hard to make it up the stairs. My heart was 115 heart rate when I was just laying in bed, and just to kind of put a nail in the coffin, I was taking my mom to campus. We were going, I go to Auburn University, for those of you who don't know, going to take her to campus, and I didn't make it out of my apartment's parking lot before I just had to stop walking because I was so out of breath. Basically, imagine that you were jogging, and, you know, you're getting, you know, tired, and so you stop and walk, and just kind of that, you know, that same kind of breathing, that really fast, heavy breathing that you do after you, you know, go for a jog or a sprint. I was doing that exact same thing, except it had been after I was just walking, and I had to stop multiple ways on the way there. We eventually made it over to the Haley Center, if you know where that is. And I'd actually had a class in the Haley Center last year. So me walking from the apartment to the Haley Center was something I did almost on a daily basis. It really should have been no big deal, but by the time I got there this time, I was nearly ready to pass out. We'd gone there to eat. I refused to eat. I went for the nearest bench, and I sat down. And that's the closest I've ever come to passing out. I've never actually passed out in my life. But that was the closest I've been. And my mom, luckily, has a little bit of medical knowledge. She's worked... She's not a medical professional, but she's worked in the medical field as a social worker. So, you know, she had me lean my head back, went and grabbed me some water. But I was getting black spots. I got to the point where I couldn't open my eyes, tunnel vision. I had to lean my head back, and I think if I hadn't leaned my head back, I would have passed out right there. So our first thought, of course, was COVID, right? Shortness of breath, not really being able to talk, or sorry, not being able to breathe, and then fast heart rate was something that some people with COVID have experienced. So we think it's COVID. Of course, COVID has symptoms of almost everything. But I mean, obviously, with the pandemic, I'm at a college. It wouldn't be that far out to assume that I could have gotten it. So I go to get tested. This happens on a Thursday. My test is a same-day test, and I took that on Friday. Now, it wasn't one of the 20-minute ones. It was more like 3-4 hours. They call me back, and they say it's negative. So then we're like, oh, maybe it's something. My family's prone to type 2 diabetes. Maybe some complications there are flaring up. Maybe it's a heart problem. My family has some histories of, you know, heart problems. Maybe it's something with that. So we get a doctor's appointment. Can't go in that Friday, but we go in Saturday at about 10 o'clock in the morning. This would be January 16th. So we go in there, and at about 10 o'clock, and the doctor takes a look at my red dots. He does an EKG to look at my heart. And all that really showed was the tachycardia is the official name. It was just my racing heart. So they found that. He wanted to run some blood work, so he did that, and then when he came back in, you could just tell on his face that it wasn't looking good. And my mom and I, we both know what... My mom's worked in the health care field, and I haven't worked around her, but I've been around her enough to know what leukemia actually specifically is, because we had talked about it before, just in passing. And the doctor came in, and he read off how low everything in my blood was, except for my white blood cells, which had skyrocketed to about 40,000. And if you know anything about where your blood should be, your white blood cells should be between 5 to 10,000-ish, somewhere in that range. Not 40, for sure. That's a sign of a serious problem. And so we knew he couldn't diagnose it at that time, but we knew that it was probably, you know, 90% leukemia. So my mom, you know, she started crying. Got one of our family friends to come up to the doctor's office to sit with us while he waited. The doctor would not let us leave until he had secured a spot at UAB. He pretty much walked in and was like, you've got to go to UAB and you've got to go today. Don't leave. And so he spent the rest of the next couple of, probably about 20-30 minutes trying to secure me a bed at UAB. And, you know, we're calling family. Got to call my dad to come meet us there. He lives in Fort Payne, Alabama. And so, you know, we knew that the situation was grim. And then my mom and I went back to my apartment in Auburn. She went back to our house in Opelika. And, you know, we packed our bags, and at 1:30 that day, we were headed up. And one thing I want to mention is Tyler from our Bible study was kind enough to bring me some food on the way too. And I mention it, it sounds like a little gesture. It's really not. It's those kinds of things that really matter. Just the willingness to bring me food randomly. I, of course, was in such a panic, you know, trying to pack. We were told 4 to 5 days-ish, pack and plan for that, which I'm sitting here trying to prepare for that and trying to take all this in, and didn't have time to go out and get food, but I needed it. I felt weak and tired. And so he was kind enough to bring me that, and he didn't have to. So, you know, no one's entitled to be nice. No one's entitled to be kind. It's always great when people are, but when people are, I don't discount that. It does take effort to be kind, and it takes effort to be nice, and he spent his money on me. He spent his time driving to come bring me food, and that food helped keep me going, and I don't just take that kind of stuff for granted, especially not now. But I just wanted to mention that. Good old Tyler. So thank you, Tyler, if you're listening. So about 1:30, we drive up to UAB, and we get there, and just immediately from the time we get there, we meet my dad, we go to my room, and immediately there are about 6 to 8 nurses, because it's about shift change time, and so they hooked me up to double IVs, one in each arm. Had to bring in, my veins are evidently very hard to get into. Yeah, so they had to bring in an ultrasound and a vein finder to get those IVs in. They also had to draw blood to examine that further to see if there was leukemia. So we did that. So I had to get 2 blood transfusions and 1 platelet transfusion to get my levels up to a place where I could function, where I'd be normal. And my hemoglobin, which is the oxygen-carrying cells in your body, are supposed to be around 14 and 15. At that time, they were about 5. Which was 5 or 6, which is why I was out of breath so much, is because I was basically operating at about half my capacity to breathe. Not to breathe, but to get that oxygen to all of my body. The oxygen was getting from my lungs to my blood just fine, but it wasn't, there wasn't enough things in my blood to carry it to my body. So we did that. And had the blood transfusions. Fortunately, thankfully, all of that went well. And later that night, about 11 o'clock, the night doctor, he comes in and he confirms that it is leukemia. He doesn't know what type, but that it was leukemia. He said about 50% of my blood was blast cells. So basically half of all of my blood was cancer cells. And that number that I talked to you earlier, I told it to you earlier, but when I went in, my white blood cell count was 40,000, right? And it should be 5 to 10. By the time I got to UAB, that white blood cell count had jumped to 50,000. And once you hit 100,000, you become much, much, it becomes hard to treat you at all. And I was very quickly on my way. Had I waited another day or two, certainly 3, I don't know that I would have been treatable. So I'm very thankful for everybody who was involved. The people who encouraged me, even though I was stubborn, to go to the doctor. And that's just not something my family's used to. You know, we feel bad, you know, unless we feel awful. You know, we'll sit there and see if it passes. But luckily, and I mean, honestly, that happened here. I've waited until I absolutely couldn't take it anymore to go to the doctor. And that's not to say, you know, go to the doctor every time you're scared, but I'll definitely be less stubborn. And I've had to learn to be less stubborn, because even in the hospital, I was stubborn to, you know, tell them if anything was wrong. Something I'm having to learn to do, especially when I'm more susceptible to everything right now. I'm having to learn to tell doctors when stuff is wrong. But anyway, that's a side note. But isn't that just a great life lesson? Don't be scared to say something's wrong with you. But anyway, so we had gone to UAB, and get there, get the diagnosis. And so that was a very crazy day, to say the least. So we turn around. Sunday, they can't do much because it's the weekend. And Martin Luther King Jr. Day was the next day, so everything had kind of gotten pushed back even further. I had to keep the IVs in for about 48 hours, which isn't awful. It just basically meant that I had to lay there, palms up, for 48 hours, because I had needles in both of those arms. And I needed both of them, because they had to give me blood and saline through one and the other through the other arm. And normally you get what's called a PICC line, which is basically a long IV. It goes in on the side of your arm. For me, it was my right arm. And it goes directly from there to your heart. And that allows you to draw blood and give chemo, or to give saline and chemo, or saline and blood, or blood and chemo, through one entrance. So it's just a little more convenient than an IV. And it usually works a little quicker. But, so I had those IVs, which wasn't very comfortable. I mean, I can sleep on my back, but, you know, I either like to sleep on my back or my stomach. So it just wasn't a very comfortable first couple of nights until I got that PICC line, which is okay. Again, you know, that's one of the things. I'm definitely taught the value of certain things that you take for granted. I'll talk about that a lot, especially in the second half of this conversation, but I mean, just being able to roll over in bed right now, I mean, I appreciate that so much. But yeah, I was at home. No. I was in the hospital. So we're in the hospital, double IV. You know, don't really get that PICC line in until like Tuesday. And that whole time, you know, we're sitting there wondering what type it is, because in leukemia, you have four types, right? You have two types of acute leukemia and two types of chronic. We were pretty sure because of how fast it was moving that it was acute, and it was. But then you have to do further research under that and figure out if, I believe it's acute lymphoblastic leukemia or acute myeloid leukemia. And usually, let me back up. So we were certain that it was acute, we just didn't know what kind. We were certain that it was fast acting, but between those two, you have the leukemia that is the most likely to be cured and the least likely to be cured. You have ALL, which usually happens in younger people and is the most likely to be able to be cured from, or maybe not cured, but the highest survival rate over the course of 5 years. Then you have AML, which is the least, because usually older people get it who can't do intense chemo, and they already have different complications, so AML is just a little harder to treat. So, you know, we're sitting there wondering which kind it is, and that determines which chemo it is, and I'll go into how this impacted me again in the second half, but it turned out to be AML, which was a big shock. And a big blow, because we didn't think that it would be that because of my age. It's very, very, very rare for a 19-year-old to get AML. And it was just hard to accept, not hard to accept that, but hard to hear that. And then as soon as they diagnosed me, they pretty much allowed me to walk one lap, and then I rolled over and did a bone marrow biopsy, which if you know what that is, it's very, very difficult, very painful procedure, and so they basically go in on the back of your hip, and they have to drill down into your bone marrow, and they numb you up well. It's not comfortable. I mean, you have a needle poking your bone where it shouldn't be touching. That doesn't feel great, and then once they get inside the bone, they can't numb that, so that hurts pretty bad. It doesn't feel great, but usually the bone marrow biopsies have yielded good things. So there's a little bit of pain there for some good news. But we found out through the first bone marrow biopsy that I had a genetic marker called inversion 16. It's kind of complicated for me to explain, but you can look that up. And it basically allowed us to add one more chemo that instead of just attacking rapidly producing cells, which is what the chemo does, or at least the one that I got, it's just attacking at random any rapidly producing cells it finds in your body. That's why you lose your hair. Yeah. And so it allowed us to get in a third kind of chemo that specifically targets my type of leukemia. So that was a huge blessing. Really great to find that out through that first bone marrow biopsy. But then after that, it was just chemo. I had three drugs. One was called cytarabine, which I got 7 days straight, 24 hours a day. I had about a 20-minute break where I could take my showers. Then I had one called idarubicin, and that's the big boy. I got that the first 3 days, and that's the one that knocks out your hair and really takes a toll on you. And then the third one was called Mylotarg. That one specifically attacked certain cells in my body, the specific leukemia cells. So I got those three over the course of that week. And then after that, the chemo was over. And the thing about it is, it's just a plug-and-chug thing, basically. You know, some diseases, there's things you can do to help your body fight it off. But that's just not the case with chemo. And, you know, that's the first thing I asked the doctors was, what can I do to help this? And they said, well, if we're honest, not really anything. You know, be positive, walk when you can, eat as much as you can, but there's nothing that you can really do that will affect the effectiveness of the chemo. And it's hard to hear because you so desperately want to have a handhold. You know, you want to have a little bit of control. You want to be able to say that I did X, Y, and Z to help it out. And there just was none. There's no control that I had over whether this substance was going to work in my body or not. And so you sit there for 2 weeks, and you're just wondering whether it's going to work or not. And I'll definitely talk about that a little more in the second half. But that's where I had a lot of emotional battles. And a lot of things to sort out. And I think it was a really great week. A really growthful week. But a tough one, for sure. And then after that, during those 2 weeks, it honestly, and I'll point this out too, it honestly wasn't as bad as it should have been. The time that people told me I was supposed to be feeling the worst, I felt the best. And I truly do feel like that's because of the amount of people who were praying for me. That's just what I think. Could be wrong, but that's what I think. Lots of prayer, lots of support, people driving up 2-3 hours, really 4 hours, 4 to 5 when you count that round trip, depending on how fast they were going, just to come wave at me through a window. 8 stories up, and talking on a cell phone for maybe 5-10 minutes, and then them just driving back. I mean, and the cards and the texts and the phone calls, you know, that all, that means something to me, and you won't realize it. You can't realize it sitting there, and I can't verbally put into words what that meant for me, but I mean, that's the kind of stuff that helps me get through, and I learned a lot from it, and I'll talk about that later, but I mean, it's just, it was a new life, a new adjustment, you know. I'm attached to a machine for a week, and on and off for the rest of the time. You know, I'm dragging it into the bathroom. I got in such a habit that even when I was disconnected from my little pole that held my drugs and my saline, sometimes I'd end up taking it into the bathroom with me. But, again, I'm very thankful and very fortunate. A lot of the side effects that I could have had for chemo, I didn't. I pretty much just had fatigue, hair loss, and some nausea that they controlled pretty well. And so I'm very thankful for that. Very thankful. The hair is kind of funny because we thought by day 14 we thought we were going to keep it, right? You know, they told us it would fall out between day 7 and day 14, and it didn't. So we're like, yeah, we made it. We were lucky. And then about day 21, it started falling out. And I was stubborn. And everybody who's had this kind of chemo, not specifically adoribism, but anyone who's had their hair fall out knows what I'm talking about, because pretty much everyone I talk to has the same feelings or went through the same thing, but, you know, we tend to be stubborn at first. Oh, it's just a little. Especially with me, because my hair was so thick. I'm like, my hair's thick. I can keep this. You can't keep it. I mean, once it started falling out, it was just quick, and it was just disgusting, and that was the most disgusting thing to me, is just laying in the bed of hair. Sorry, I'm not really holding back too many details, but I mean, you're basically just sitting there in your own hair, and it's disgusting. And so, you know, for some people it may be a traumatic thing to cut your hair off. I was ready. I was so ready. I was just tired of it. And so, very much chopped that off. Still bald, still beardless. I want the beard back. Probably stay bald for a bit, just to see how it looks, but I think it's just now starting to come back, about a month or two afterwards. So that was around day 21, and day 14, they did the second bone marrow biopsy, and it was clean. And so after that, it was just waiting for my immune system to come back up. Unfortunately, during that time, I contracted two different infections, so those were extra hurdles. I felt really bad with the second infection. I had a fever that just wouldn't break for about 48 hours. And, you know, when you have a fever, you feel cold. They don't let you wear blankets when you have a fever, because your body wants to up that temperature. So you feel normal when you've got that blanket on and you're getting warm, but you're getting too warm. And when you have a fever, they have to draw more blood, and I'm already difficult to draw blood from, and so that just made things harder. And then you have to put ice packs all over you to try to cool yourself down and break the fever, and that just kind of makes for a miserable night. Because you get cold, then you get hot, then you get cold again, and, you know, that wasn't fun. But got through that. Eventually, you know, while you're in the moment, you really don't feel like you're going to get through it, but you do. You know, and that was one of the things I had to battle with, was I going to get through this cancer? But again, I'll touch on that more later. But yeah, so the infections eventually cleared up. They weren't uncommon infections, and both of them came from bacteria that was already inside me, which they expected and pretty much told us on, like, day two that was going to happen. The guy walked in, it was pretty blatant. He's like, you're going to have an infection while you're here. And I did. But they were able to treat them both. And eventually I was all right. And eventually my immune system came back up after 2 more weeks. Which those were hard just because I was sitting there feeling fine except for the infections. You know, I was feeling fine, ready to go. I was seeing people post about how beautiful the weather was getting, because it was just now starting to get pretty. And I wanted so badly just to be able to go outside. Plus, with one of the infections, they didn't want me leaving the room. So I was told for about 2 weeks. I think I was 2 days shy of 2 weeks. So almost 2 weeks, but not quite. But almost 2 weeks, I didn't leave the room. And that was hard. That was very hard. You know, basically just think about you doing a quarantine. It was actually a little longer than a quarantine where you cannot leave your room. It's difficult, not the most difficult thing, but it was hard. And so when I, again, just learned to appreciate a lot, and, you know, I just looked outside every day and, you know, just so badly wanted to go walk outside around the green space and just couldn't. You know, I wanted to go down when people came up and actually say hi and hug somebody. I didn't touch anybody this whole 30 days. Didn't give anyone a hug. It was hard. You know, I very desperately wanted to get out and to go say hi to everybody. Just to enjoy a day, to breathe some fresh air. So don't take that for granted. The next time you leave your room, leave the house, go outside, enjoy a nice day, go on a vacation. Don't enjoy that. Or don't take that for granted. Enjoy it. Even vacations right now are hard. We're trying to plan to go to the beach next week just because I haven't been on a vacation this whole time. I've been in Birmingham every Monday of this year except for the first two Mondays. And then finally last Monday was the first Monday I didn't have to be in Birmingham. So that's 7 out of 9 Mondays. So don't take the freedoms that you have from a healthy life for granted. Enjoy those. I promise you. You know, I'm not saying that enjoy those until you get, because one day you'll get cancer, but I mean, enjoy those. Because we tend to go around and think that those are things that are just part of life. And I definitely realize now that even something as simple as me getting up and going to my living room without having to, you know, drag a pole with me, or being able to get up and go to my living room, being able to probably hear that train in the background, but being able to get up and go outside and to walk around. Yeah, don't take it for granted. After those 2 week period, I was told that I could have gotten out of the room sooner. So that was kind of frustrating, but oh well, I had already made it through. And so I just walked the halls, and it felt great. And then eventually my immune system jumped up from 0, and to a couple days later, it jumped up enough to the point where I could leave. And so I got to leave at day 30 on Valentine's Day. I got to come home. And I've been up to Birmingham for another bone marrow biopsy since, which officially has put me into remission, which is a great feeling. And so I've done one round of post-chemo, which is just the cytarabine that I was talking about earlier. And I'm a week out from that right now. So God's done a great work. I'll dive into that a little more later. Again, in my second half of how this all kind of impacted me. But I'm back home right now. And do be praying for me. I know not everyone listening to this is going to agree with that. But if you do, and you do pray, please be praying for me. I'm having some complications right now. Expected complications. But complications nonetheless. Like I said earlier, my mouth is pretty torn up with ulcers right now. And it's always funny how, you know, a little bit of constant pain can be really distracting from life. And they're not really that bad, but still painful. They're making, you know, this is, you know, just hard to eat. I'm trying to eat right, and just trying to do that. Even that's kind of hard to do. Oh my gosh, I've got to tell you. So y'all, there was this 1 week, and I smelled, my nose was heightened somehow, and I just smelled like, I'm told, like a pregnant woman. I mean, my dad put down, I got tired of hospital food. I got to the point where I could only eat breakfast, and then everything else we brought in, but they brought in these bags, and my dad got Moe's one night, for example, and he said 3 bags down in front of me, and I could tell him without looking in them which one had the chips, which one had the wrap, and which one had the bowl, and I told him correctly because I could just smell it. I could smell the chips, I could smell the bowl, and I could smell the wrap, and I could tell them all apart, and that's how sensitive my nose was. That's where a lot of my nausea came from, was just from, I mean, I could smell everything. And if that's what pregnancy is like, I have a renewed sense of sympathy for all you mothers out there. Just thought that was a fun little story to tell. There's a lot of complications that you have, and I think another reason why I'm doing this is to kind of, I certainly realize now that I did not understand what it's like on the cancer side of things. First of all, every cancer is a little bit different, so what I'm saying can really only speak into AML. I can't speak into ALL, chronic leukemias, or any other cancer, because those are all treated differently. Their experiences are similar but different. And every cancer person, everyone who has cancer, has something similar, has a very similar experience, I found, but everything's a little bit different, just from the nature of treatments and such. But there are a lot of complications, I realize now, that happen that aren't just chemo. And, you know, when you don't really understand something about cancer, you know, you just hear the word cancer, you know, your heart kind of sinks, you know that that's a bad thing. And you know that that person is having a rough experience. And maybe if you've had a family member, you kind of know what that experience is like. And I really didn't up until that point. And so I didn't really understand what cancer was like. You know, I knew chemo was rough. I didn't quite know what it was going to be like. And I certainly don't think I've gotten the worst of it. There are certainly plenty of people that I've heard who have had it much worse than me. Really, I have nothing to complain about. That's been my philosophy, and I truly believe that. That's not me trying to say it to make myself feel better. I truly believe that I am very fortunate. And I truly believe I have nothing to complain about. This cancer has brought about a lot of worry and a lot of stress, but it's brought about so much good already in the past couple of months. I don't have anything to complain about. I really don't. But yeah, there are different things. You know, you think cancer, chemo, you got to get through the chemo. For me, at least, it's not even so much the chemo. I mean, that knocks you down pretty hard. But you get the different complications, those infections that come up. I didn't have the ulcers the first time. I've got them pretty bad now. You know, I've got some complications with my liver. You have to watch things with kidneys and the fluids that you're getting. You have to be careful what's going into your body. There's just so much that happens as a result of the chemo. Some little side effects. And those can become just as hard as well. So if you would, if you're listening and you're a praying person, all that is to say, the only thing I ask that you would pray for me, for continued healing, first of all, and then just pray. I'm experiencing, like I said, some pain in my mouth. It will go away, I know that, but just be praying for that. And then I'm also experiencing a lot of symptoms. The chemo and the leukemia basically do the same thing. They both knock your blood counts way down. The only difference is leukemia, your white blood cells are going to shoot up, whereas with chemo, they're going to go down with everything else. So it's been a little mentally challenging to see all of these effects again that I had in the very beginning. I know it's not the leukemia. It's still hard to see. I have to mentally fight that anxiety of seeing all these things again. The red dots are back, and they're worse right now than they were when I had leukemia. And it's just because I'm pretty sure my platelets have hit rock bottom. If I wasn't going to the doctor's office tomorrow, I'd probably have to schedule a meeting to go in. But, I mean, luckily we do blood work twice a week. This is covered. It's expected. I'm having trouble again climbing up the stairs. But relatively, I've been good. I've been great. I've been mentally aware for the most part. I had a few weird days where I was just kind of saying some weird things in a kind of a mental fog, the first couple of days after chemo. Don't know if that was from sleep deprivation or chemo. Both are equally possible, but I'm fine now. And I was never, I mean, don't sit there and think that I'm, like, being neurologically damaged right now. It's just, like I said, like I was sleepy, which is, again, expected. So, just be praying for me that some of these side effects would go away, that we can get the right treatments in. As far as just blood transfusions and whatnot, platelet transfusions. But yeah, I'm going to come back a little bit later and probably get into some deeper stuff. But right now my voice is probably pretty much shot and my mouth's kind of hurting, so I'm going to give it a little bit of a rest. Thank you all for listening. If you've listened this far, hopefully this has kind of helped you to, you know, a little bit about what my experience is like. And I don't say it for sympathy. I really don't. Again, it's to help somebody who knows someone or is someone going through this, because I know that a lot of my encouragement and a lot of things that have encouraged me is just hearing the fact that I'm not alone in feeling these things. And like I said, I don't have anything to complain about. I don't want sympathy. I do need support. You know, if you feel like reaching out, please do. You know, sympathy isn't bad, of course. I think that you should feel compassion and sympathy. The purpose of this, though, isn't to beg for it and isn't to ask for your sympathies. The purpose of this is to help others and to educate people on what my life has been like. Because I do know two people have probably been wanting to hear from me about all this. First and foremost, it's to thank people. So to encourage, inform, and educate, I want to make sure... and to thank. I want to make sure that those are very clear. Last but not least, I want to make sure that I make a point to thank God, of course, as cheesy as that sounds, but I gotta say that because I truly believe it. So I know that probably inflames some of you, but and encourages others, but gotta say it, I think. Not because I'm required to, because I want to. Because I do think he's had a hand in all of this. I'll dive into that more in the second half. But thank you for listening.